Well, as we heard when we lit the Advent candles, the theme for the third week of Advent is John the Baptist, who prepared the way for Jesus. John was the cousin of Jesus, and according to St. Matthew, he lived in the Judean desert. He was dressed like the prophet Elijah, wearing clothes made of camel's hair and a leather belt. And he ate locusts and honey, that is, simple food fitting for someone on the move with a message to proclaim. The Judean desert wasn't sand dunes, but it was a pretty inhospitable place. John's was the voice that Isaiah speaks of in Isaiah chapter 40. One calling in the desert, prepare the way for the Lord. Have any of you been to a desert or a wilderness place? Think about what it's like. The Judean desert was like this. Well, this is the Judean desert. This is rocky and stony and dry. There's a little bit of vegetation, but not much. Life is hard in a wilderness like this, and it's a place of wild animals and danger. But strangely, it's also the place where God reveals himself, where John the Baptist lived and baptized people, and where God changes people. People were drawn to go out into the desert to see John. They wanted to confess their sins and to be baptized. They were searching for something, and they knew that the wilderness was the place to go. There's been a fascination amongst travel writers for writing about wilderness. Have any of you read Belden Lane, Solace of Fierce Landscapes? Anyone read that? No. Well, it's all about desert and mountain spirituality. And he says, sometimes people need to go to wild places to find themselves, as he did, in order to deal with some grief in his life. In the early days of Christianity, people used to go out to desert places to find God. They needed to get away from the noise of daily life so they could hear his voice. And of course, some people do that today as well. Sometimes we use the term wilderness as an analogy to describe a period of time when we're struggling with life and it all seems so hard, lonely, or unproductive. When life feels like this picture looks. Well, Isaiah was writing to people who felt they were in a wilderness, partly because they were living away from home in exile, and partly because they turned away from God and life was hard without him. Perhaps they drifted away and didn't know how to get back, how to get him back into their lives. Maybe some of us can identify with that. The previous chapter in Isaiah is full of dire warnings of what will happen if they continue to turn their faces away from God. But now comes a transition, a beautiful promise that all these hard times are coming to an end. The dry, lifeless wilderness will blossom, says Isaiah, bursting with flowers, lush with fresh water, and full of life and joy. The wilderness will rejoice and blossom. Like the crocus, it will burst into bloom. This life and joy seems to touch the whole of creation. Not only does it bring strength and healing to people who are feeling weak and fearful, but the very landscape will shout for joy, says Isaiah. And everyone will see the glory of God. What a promise. The writer Paula Gooder likens the effect to a choir. The blossoming desert and the people whose lives have been transformed will all be singing together and in harmony in a beautiful concert. I don't know what sort of week you've had or how you feel about the political landscape we now find ourselves in since the election, and don't worry, I'm not going to ask you. But wouldn't it be lovely to be refreshed and energized and filled with joy in the way that this blossoming desert was? This passage in Isaiah 35 is all about salvation, how God is bringing good things to his people and to the world. And he describes it in different ways, each involving the senses. Beautiful flowers being found in unexpected places. He says the desert will rejoice and blossom. Tired, weak, and fearful people being strengthened by God and given courage. Strengthen the feeble hands, steady the knees that give way. Say to those with fearful hearts, be strong, do not fear. Your God will come to save you. And to those who cannot see or hear or walk properly, they will be healed. The theologian Brueggemann suggests that maybe the writer is also describing those who have been what he calls immobilized by fear. So not just those who are physically unable to see or hear or walk properly, but those who, because of something that's happened to their emotions, just are unable to be at their best. And the hot, dry desert will become well watered so that life can flourish. And finally, he says there will be a holy highway along which God's people can walk in safety on their way to worship God in Zion. And of course, in those days, that was Jerusalem. That's where they went to worship God. And for us, we can worship God anywhere. This passage has layers of meaning. It meant something to the people of God living in exile in Isaiah's time, which was about 600 years before Jesus. It was a promise that they would return home, and it was a source of great comfort at the time. But it's also something that looks forward to the coming of Jesus into the world to live among us. The physical healing that Isaiah describes is picked up in our gospel reading. Matthew relates how when John the Baptist's disciples came to ask him if he was the Messiah, the one they'd all been expecting to come and save them, Jesus said, "Well, go and tell John what you can see and hear. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those with leprosy are cured, the dead are raised, and the good news is preached to the poor." This is what Isaiah had foretold. This is the evidence, the confirmation that Jesus is the Messiah, the one who has come to save his people. Now, John the Baptist is someone whose entire life was dedicated to pointing beyond himself to Jesus, in whom he knew the glory of God would be revealed. So it's interesting that John asked that question, "Are you the one we've been waiting for?" He was in prison at the time, and I wonder if he was beginning to doubt. Or perhaps Jesus' ministry wasn't looking quite like the revolutionary change that he was expecting. Or perhaps he was beginning to buckle under the strain of being isolated in prison, or realizing that he would probably never get out. Even those of great faith who have witnessed amazing acts of God, as John did when he baptized Jesus, and he saw the Spirit descend on him and heard the voice from heaven saying, "This is my beloved Son." Even they can at times find that their faith is severely tested and start to ask questions. He would surely have been encouraged by the message that his disciples would bring back to him. "See, people are being healed. Those spiritually as well as physically blind, deaf and lame are being healed by Jesus. He is the Messiah. Now the kingdom of heaven is here, the time that Isaiah was speaking about, when the wilderness will rejoice and blossom, and people living in times of wilderness will blossom." This is what John had been preparing people for. So how would we describe this sort of blossoming today? We don't live in a wilderness, but how would we describe that blossoming? I think we might use the word well-being or flourishing. That is a state of physical, emotional, and spiritual health. It's a really beautiful concept, and probably something that those of us getting frazzled in the run-up to Christmas or drained by all that is expected of us could really do with. A sense of well-being or flourishing tends to lead us to a place where we can enjoy life to the full, stepping out in confidence, making the most of opportunities, stretching ourselves. Like my daughter did here, abseiling off Malham Cove, which is what she did just after this photograph was taken. And she discovered that to be an experience where she really flourished and grew and enjoyed life to the full. Surely we all want to flourish as people, but do we want to flourish in the Christian life? Well, all these beautiful images in Isaiah are pointing towards Jesus and all that he came to bring us when he came into the world. So that's why we have the pink candle to represent joy on the third Sunday of Advent. Though those who look closely will see that ours is gold. I think we couldn't find a pink one. But it's a different one to represent joy because we're nearly there. We're nearly at the time when we can celebrate the birth of Jesus and the spiritual life that he offers each one of us. The question is, are we ready for God to fulfill his promise in our lives? Are we looking towards Jesus, recognizing who he is, the one who brings this blossoming and joy into the dry and desolate parts of our lives? Are we ready to make him welcome in our hearts? The promise in Isaiah is for all of us. The wilderness will rejoice and blossom. Like the crocus, it will burst into bloom. So let's do what we can to invite God in to do his work in our hearts, to use the season of Advent to reflect on where we're going in life, and to pray, asking for more of the joy and flourishing that Jesus brings, both for us and in the world around us. In these post-election times, this work of God in our hearts needs to flow out and touch others. It needs to be shared. It needs to touch the marginalised in our society, those with whom we have differences of opinion, whether that's politically or in some other way, and those with whom we need to be reconciled, so that together and with God's help, we can build a better society for all. Amen.